For those lightning bugs and princess dresses, cleaning up all my messes, stalling bedtime long as you could. I remember every hug and every laugh before I knew it went so fast. No, I didn't grow slow as my lassie. I know life's not, but those days were perfect.
What is up, dads and moms? Thanks for joining us. You have Jonathan here, the Dad Corp podcast, for another weekly episode. We appreciate your support. Thank you so much for all the feedback and sharing. We are now in 31 countries. We love you all. We can't thank you enough for being part of the Dad Corp community. This week's episode is brought to you by www.thedadcorp.com. Come check out our website while you're there. Pick up a Dad Life Collection shirt or one of our Dad Life Comfort Collection shirts. We have discounts for our listeners. Enter podcast 15 and we'll give you 15% discount. Our shirts feel great. They look great. They're high quality. The only thing better than our company is our customer service. So if you reach out and you have any questions, you'll get a response from Dustin or I. We have thousands of reviews across our social media. If you do decide to pick up a shirt, take some pictures with the kids, send them to us. We'll shoot them out on our social media. We love to get feedback. We love to see the pictures of our dads out there wearing our shirts and enjoying the dad life. So we hope you enjoyed the music this week. We changed it up a little bit. We had a chance to meet with country singer Shellen Climb, who has the song Little Pink Glasses. That's the song you heard. So go out there and support Shellen Climb. He has a great following. He wrote the song about his daughter. He's another engaged dad who just loves fatherhood. He's living in the trenches, and so let's go out there and support him. Also, this week's episode is brought to you by Declan James Watches, founded by U.S. Navy SEAL Brian Dougherty. If any of you have heard our recent podcast, you know that I am a huge fan of this watch. I bought one myself. I wear it everywhere. I go to the beach with it. I go to business with it. It is one of the most versatile watches I have in my wardrobe. So if any modern dad out there wants to look good, feel great with a fantastic watch on their wrist, that is the one to pick up. And to make it even better, Brian has given us a 10% discount for our listeners on the Dad Corp podcast. So enter DC10 on his website, www.declanjameswatchco.com. Let's support an American hero and another dad who is in the trenches being engaged and building a legacy for his kids. All right, this week's episode, we have a special guest husband, four-time father, healthcare disruptor, TEDx and international speaker, author, Spartan athlete, and farmer, Justin Batt. He is the founder of Daddy Saturday. They're an international organization all in to impact 10 million fathers in the next 10 years and end fatherlessness through Daddy Saturday. Just to give you an idea of how incredible this man is, I do not know Justin. I had just reached out to him through a LinkedIn cold request to come on to the Dad Corp and talk to us about parenting, the Daddy Saturday vision, and his own philosophies around being an engaged father. He graciously accepted. We had a fantastic conversation. He's an inspiration. I am a huge fan, and I cannot wait for you to hear this episode. He is a living example of what it looks like to be an engaged father. He lives by the philosophy, much more is caught than taught. So he is out there showing his kids how to be successful, how to set goals, how to work hard, and how to be an example in your community and with your family to live a fulfilled life. So without further ado, let's get Justin on here to talk about the fight for engaged fathers. You were saying that you have moved to Nashville recently, so you've been there about a week?
Yeah, so we've been in Nashville for about a week. Gosh, it's been just a whirlwind. So when we were in Charleston, we took the kids out surfing one last time, and we're just about to wrap it up, and I went to jump off the bottom of the ocean floor to jump over my board, and I stepped on a stingray, and I got nailed in my left foot. And so literally it was a Saturday and we were moving on the following Thursday and Friday. So I was like hobbling around trying to pack up boxes. It was just a disaster of an experience. And so we get all moved. We get to Nashville, and then I have to go into emergency surgery because it's infected, and there's a couple of barbs that were left from a stingray stinger in my ankle. So then we got here, and we're stuck in a VRBO, and I had to have ankle surgery. I'm supposed to run 100 miles in 24 hours in Utah with some buddies for a good cause, Operation Underground Railroad. So I had to cancel that. And then we get in the house, and now just trying to recover and heal and get unpacked. And things are crazy right now. But, you know, it's all good. We know the long-term benefit of being here and the land and the house and how we want to raise our family is going to be worth it. So short-term pain for long-term gain.
Man, I think there's like three questions that just came to my mind already. So first, surgery went well.
Yeah, I mean, as well as can be, you know, I've never been stung by a stingray before, and most people haven't. And the orthopedic surgeon that ended up taking my case in Nashville, I told him, I said, I think you just wanted to treat me because you want to say you treated a stingray sting in Nashville. And of course, you got a good chuckle out of that. But it was a very complicated surgery. And in fact, the barb had severed a nerve in my lower foot completely in half. It's a major nerve. So from my ankle down the left side of my foot all the way up to my pinky toe, that whole like bottom side is completely numb. Feels like I have lidocaine in there. And I have no sensation, no feeling. And it'll be that way for probably years until it's able to regrow. And the neurotoxins are so strong that it really damages the tissue severely. So it's slow to heal. I'm doing all these alternative therapies like K-laser. I even looked at stem cell, but it was way too expensive. And the doctor was like, very honest, you know, you could do it, but you're not going to get the benefit because of how the nerve severed. So he's like, I would advise against it, just wasting your money. So yeah, it's recovering. It's just slow. And I am not the kind of person who likes to be hamstrung in any sense of the word. So this has been a huge adjustment period for me, just being down for 3 weeks. It's probably the longest I've been down in, I mean, ever. So
that's crazy. Yeah. You know, I only know two people that have gotten stung by a stingray. One was Steve Irwin, and now I've had the pleasure to meet you. So I have never actually met anyone else that's had that happen. And when you first said it, you made it seem like it wasn't a big thing other than the infection, but you must have been in some serious pain if you had surgery with nerve damage.
Yeah. So, you know, I admittedly have a high pain tolerance, and it's something I train for both mentally and, you know, and physically, doing Spartan races and doing some of the stuff that I do. And so I put myself in positions of being comfortable, being uncomfortable. And so I've trained, I've practiced, I do breathing exercises, right? Like I'm used to that stuff. And so I can manage or mitigate through a lot of pain over long periods of time. But I'll tell you, this was the most intense pain that I've ever felt in my entire life, like to the point where I was like, just shoot me. About 20 minutes after the sting, for about an hour later, I mean, it was 10 out of 10, off the charts, just excruciating pain. And you have to put your foot, the sting area, in scalding hot water, though. I had like first degree burns on my foot, and it pulls the neurotoxin out. It neutralizes it. In other words, another way to say it. So it neutralizes the neurotoxin, and that's the only way you get any relief. And so it went down from about a 10 to a 5 or a 6 after that point, but still painful, still bad. Not something I want to live through again. And the biggest blessing of the whole thing was my son Blaine was my 10-year-old to the right of me about 10 yards, 15 yards. And so I'm just thankful it was me and not one of my kids, because I could not imagine watching them go through something like that.
That's something else. Even in the Cayman Islands, there's the stingray island where you can just go out and swim with them, and there's 50 to 100 stingrays just circling you, coming up on your back. And I don't know if they've ever had an issue. So yeah, talk about just kind of the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, exactly. So I got sent off from Charleston with a bang. We'll just say that.
Well, I hope it only gets better from here with Nashville. It's a really cool city. I've had a lot of fun there. Best of luck in your new move. The other thing you said, Operation Underground Railroad, that organization's amazing. So you were going to run a 24-hour marathon?
Yeah. So a couple of other dads and I just decided that we would do this to show that, one, you know, a couple of dads can get together and do something amazing, and at the same time, probably a bit crazy, and also do it for a great cause. And so we were raising funds to around a promotion for the event to run 100 miles in 24 hours. Initially, it was planned out in L.A. Then COVID happened, so it got canceled and then pushed back. And then One of the guys lives out in Utah, so we're going to do it out in Utah. But unfortunately, you know, because of the stingray sting and then surgery, it's like I physically just couldn't do it. But I was mentally still ready to do it. And I'll tell you a cool story. The listeners might appreciate this. Is I was, after the sting, I was still going to run the race. And I didn't even say anything otherwise. Everybody's like, you can't run. I was like, yeah, I'm still running. But then I got the surgery a week later. So now we're like less than a week out from the race. And now I haven't run in almost 2 weeks. I can barely walk. I'm on crutches and in a boot. And I go to the running store and I buy new running shoes. I buy all the gear. I buy all my supplements. I buy a headlamp, buy my plane ticket to Utah. And my wife is like, what are you doing? Like, you're out of your mind. Like, you're not going to go do this. I was like, yes, I am. I'm going to go run. Just watch. And then it was like 2 days before. And then I finally said, okay, I cannot run. Like, physically, I'm not in the shape to do it. And it's going to cause far more long-term damage if I tried to do it than it would if I just bow out at this point. I told the guys I couldn't make it, and they were disappointed, but that was that. And I did that for a reason. I knew in my mind that I wasn't going to be able to run. I mean, it was obvious, right? I mean, you could look at me and I knew that, but I never said those words out loud because the power of the spoken word is so important. And especially with your kids, right? The words that they speak and the words you speak over them are so important. So my mindset, by saying I was running that race, I had something to look forward to. I had purpose, and that caused my healing to accelerate. So I have no doubt that I am in a better state today because of that mindset and that reframe than I would have been had I just said, you know, I got stung, I'm out, or at the surgery, now I'm out. Like, I literally pushed at the last minute until it was, you know, would have been disrespectful to them not to let them know. And so it was a great life lesson. My kids kind of saw me work through that, and we all learned a lot through the experience.
Yeah. You know, the theme I think we're going to get into here real shortly is you have four children and you've really went out to set an example, and both in the way you teach them, but also show them.
Yeah. One of our principles in Daddy Saturday is that far more is caught than taught. And so, and we can try and teach our kids things, and that needs to be a principle, and we need to do that. And there are so many teaching moments just in life that you can use with your kids. But at the end of the day, they will probably take more away from watching you and observing you and modeling what you do than they ever will what you actually try and teach them. And so, and that's one of my cornerstones as a father and as a parent that I try to live out with my kids, is just to set that example and to let them follow suit and hopefully the positive things that I do, and recognize that they're going to catch what I'm putting out.
And so tell me about Daddy Saturday and where it came from in the vision and journey you've been on with that organization.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks for the question. So I'll say, going back 13 years ago, and don't get scared because it won't take me 13 hours to tell this story, but 13 years ago, my wife was a teacher, decided to open a bridal boutique, and I was in corporate America, and we had our first daughter our first child at the same time. She opened the store. We named the store after her, Hayden Olivia Bridal. Our daughter's Hayden Olivia. And I found myself at home with our two-week-old daughter by myself all day on Saturdays because my wife was working at her store as an entrepreneur, wearing all the hats. And fast forward, I had three more boys to the mix after that. And I found myself on those Saturdays now having accelerated up the corporate ladder, you know, really busy, stressed out weeks, traveling a lot, burning the candle at both ends, coming home on a Friday or being exhausted going into the weekend, and just not having the best day that I could have with my kids, having this amazing opportunity to have them all day by myself, but then not maximizing that or optimizing the time we had together. So I came up with a plan to create an epic day together, these epic moments and memories, by planning our day, having a game plan, and taking my kids either in our backyard or in our community or elsewhere on these epic experiences, or creating these epic experiences. And everything changed when we started doing it. Like, the relationship changed, the communication was enhanced, and my kids were young at the time, but it just became, Dad, on Saturday, they'd look forward to it. And middle of the week, they'd start asking me, Dad, what are we doing for Saturday? And one of those Wednesday mornings before school, my middle son Mason said, Dad, what are we doing for Daddy Saturday? I was like, oh my gosh, son, you just named it. Like, that's what we're calling this thing. It's Daddy Saturday. And so that's what it became. And we named it and started putting our silly videos on YouTube. And pretty soon the neighborhood kids were getting into it and coming over, and some of the other dads. And then I was asked 2 years ago to give a TEDx on fatherlessness. And I gave the talk, and I learned about the two types of fatherlessness: the lack of a biological father in the home, which affects over 20 plus million kids in America today. And then the lack of a dad who's physically present, but emotionally absent, the other form of fatherlessness. And I was like, gosh, like, that was me for a period of time. And I know a lot of other dads that are like that. And I'm sure there's millions of dads that are struggling with the same thing that I was struggling with. And I've got something that can help them. And I just felt called to it. And so because of that calling, I wanted to honor it. And so I wrote the book, Daddy Saturday, as a field manual to help dads be intentional and engaged with their kids, give them practical tips and ways how. And then we created an Alexa skill and now a Google Assistant that literally will put the activity and ideas based on the weather in your area right into your inbox or your Amazon cart to make it super easy. We've done live and virtual events. And then we formed our nonprofit or our foundation, which is there to support the incarcerated fathers, National Guard fathers, opportunity zones, which are low-income areas that are being invested in economically, but not a lot of social programming, and then first responders, firefighters, police, and EMT. And then we also started our Fatherhood Fellows program, which is our international fatherhood program. And we now have Daddy Saturday Kenya established, and our great partner over there is doing amazing work all across Kenya to restore fatherhood. And so it's just gone from my backyard with my four kids as a dad trying to figure this thing out to now, you know, we have an international presence and hoping to make an impact on 10 million fathers in 10 years and then fatherlessness as a result.
I wish I could say something to justify just how awesome that is. Never mind the fact that you also have four kids. You also are very active physically if you're planning to do a 100-mile run with some other dads. How do you balance all of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Sometimes I question myself as I go about my days. You know, I think that I'm naturally a very disciplined person, and that certainly helps me. But what I've done is I just had to put everything on paper on purpose and just create a routine or a habit that fits into a lifestyle that I want to obtain. And so I set my big goals for the year. I set them individually. I set them with my wife, and then all my kids also set their own goals. And so we have our family goals, individual goals. And a lot of those goals are things that my daily work will ladder up into. And so I want to run 100 miles in 24 hours, right? I have to plan for that month ahead of time. And so what does that look like, and how can I fit that into my schedule? Another thing that I'm very focused on, and I've done this wrong for a period of time, so then I had to reframe it, is I also look for things and say, what is going to pull me away from my family? So if there's something that's pulling me away from my family, then I really have to look at that and say, is it worth it? And we have a discussion as a family about it. So those are all really important from a high level. And then on a daily perspective, I mean, I just get up early. So I'm early to rise, typically wake up around or before 5 a.m., do a devotional, get my mind right, my spirituality right, and then read God's word. And then I go and I exercise and I get out of the way first thing in the morning. And then I'm there to engage my kids when they're waking up or getting breakfast, especially before school when we were in school. And then, you know, I go about my work day. And then at the end of that work day, I'm able to shut it down and be with my family around dinner time. And then if I need to pick back up work in my second or third day job, which typically is Daddy Saturday at that point, or help my wife in her business, then we do that in the evening at night. So those are some ways that I'm able to do that and manage my day. Those days are super busy and they add up. But at the same time, you know, it's a great opportunity to every day have focused intensity and discipline. And when you start to add or stack those days, that's how you get to that end result.
We had a guest on, Kisan Patel, and he's the founder of a mergers and acquisitions science organization and another software technology called Deal Room. And he's very focused on setting a goal and then working backwards to figure out how to make that goal work. And I think that's amazing advice, right? To set a large goal, but then break it up into chunks, and it allows you to see if you're on track, where you need to make changes, or if the goal is reasonable with every other priority you have. And if you're in the corporate world and you've had any project or program management experience, it's almost like project management 101. Maybe that's where you've learned that skill set.
Yeah, I absolutely took some stuff from the corporate world and brought that over. I think that's a part of it. That's something that we often don't do enough in life and in fatherhood, in my perspective, is we don't borrow what we know from the corporate world and bring that back into our personal lives and into our family. So, you know, we set mission, vision, values, dream boards, right? We do all those things as a family, and we do those individually. And those are corporate type of strategies and structures that we bring into our family. And project management is a piece of those, right? How do you work backwards towards a goal? And, you know, we don't build Gantt charts in our family, or we're not that rigid about it. But we do believe in some of those higher level principles that are so worthy and worthwhile in the business space that we just often tend to fail to bring into our home.
And Daddy Saturday, that's a great book. You nailed it. And I'm sure I'm one of a million people that have told you that, but just such a good book. I went into your playbook of the 52 activities. You've essentially created a bucket list for dads on Saturdays.
Yeah, you can call it that. Essentially what I did was I took a lot of the zany ideas and crazy activities that we did on our Saturdays and, you know, compiled a bunch of those into the app or the Alexa skill and into the playbook. And, you know, what I found was that a lot of the dads that I talked to, they said, look, we want to engage our kids. We just don't know how. We don't know what to do. So I said, well, I can solve that problem. Again, see a need, fill a need. And so what we did was we just brought the opportunity to their fingertips through technology or through resources to enable them to have those ideas at their disposal, and they can pick and choose what fits their family, fits the age of their kids, and makes it fun. And, you know, we've got great feedback on those. And I think that was part of the plan, is to remove every single barrier obstacle that a dad could have to being intentional and engaged with their kids.
And you play into one of the triggers of fatherhood or dads. And you talk about that in your book. You talk about the word and use the term dad envy. And it's where dads become competitive with each other in an attempt to one up. And I'll just be honest, Justin, I went to your playbook and I literally wrote down what I've done out of those 52. So challenge is accepted. I'm coming in. I'm going to get those 52 knocked out. It was awesome though. Like and on a serious note, that dad envy is real, and you've turned it into a positive trigger that enables dads to be motivated. And your book does exactly that to me. Like when I was reading through and then I went into your playbook, as I wrote down the different activities that we have done, such as kids' theater and kids' restaurants and the cardboard box house, you were bringing so many memories back to me too, which my daughter is 6 years old. And as you go through the life, it seems like it just moves so fast, but those memories were so kind of vivid in my mind. And you know, it was actually just such a nice experience to think about some of those times that we've had together and the memories that we made. So I thought the activities were great. And there's a few that I can't wait to do that we haven't done, such as random acts of kindness. That was genius. The whisper challenge looks like it's a lot of fun. And the letter to the troops, that one also impacted me strongly because I actually was thinking about the activity, and you mentioned, you know, officers in the community. There's so much negativity in this world, and I'm sure your kids are asking you questions, or you're trying to explain, and I'm trying to explain, and we're all trying to explain to our kids. And, you know, these letters have to be a way to probably also educate your kids on the different functions in our society, and you know, help them start to understand that, you know, there is a lot of good out there in the world.
Yeah. I think that's where, going back to our original conversation, that there are so many teachable moments when we're with our kids. And so that's a lot of the principles and those 52 ideas is, yes, it's meant to be fun and lighthearted and playful and get dad down on his hands and knees, right, with the kids. But at the same time, there's also a bigger principle and application. And I'm glad that you saw through that and saw the deeper meaning of those activities, because it's not just, you know, the slime bucket challenge or sending a letter to the troops, right? It's the why behind that. And it's what's the part of it. And there's science, there's math, there's values, there's vision. There's all sorts of things that you can incorporate into those activities. And that's how you can scale it up or down too for the age of your kid. And, you know, when I look at our troops as an example, right? I want to teach my kids about respect for their freedom, and that freedom isn't free, right? It comes at a cost, and it's not something we just celebrate on Memorial Day or on the 4th of July. Like, this is something where we just don't do some of those simple things any longer. And I'm like, why would we not write letters to the troops? Or we've done stuff where we've taken, every around Halloween, we take a pumpkin where we'll draw the local police or fire logo on the pumpkin, and we'll take it down to the police station and we'll bring them some candy. And the fire station, and bring them some candy and drop the pumpkin off. And like, they go crazy over that. And you can just see it's something so small. And now my kids, like, they get carte blanche access at the fire station or the police station. The, you know, the police chief has them up in his office, and they're getting all the little kids badges. They're getting tours the whole place. And, you know, they just feel like they're kings and queens, and they have that respect. And it's really cool to see that, you know, they also get to understand respect for authority, and how just something so small can be so meaningful for somebody and make them feel appreciated. So we try to do as much as possible. And I'm glad you saw that there's a bigger principle to the applications of what you can do with your kids.
It's incredible. And what have they said about your book and the activities and your overall organization?
It's funny because, you know, they're like, we're on the cover of a book. Like, that's really cool. And then my wife and I were, or my daughter and I were going out on a trip, and we were going out to LA, and we're sitting on an airplane, and a guy walks by and he goes, "Hey, you're Daddy Saturday." I was like, "Yeah, I'm Daddy Saturday." So he's like, "Man, I got a copy of your book. It's such an awesome book." And he's like, "Hey, this is my wife and these are my kids." And I was like, "Hey guys, you know, good to meet you." I'm like, "This is Hayden." They're like, "Oh yeah, you're Hayden." And she kind of looks at me, and you know, it's this random person who recognized me, and you know, we're not big by any means, but those kinds of things are kind of cool for your kids and for them to get to experience that. But I think they see now the bigger role that they play, and they have an accountability when we go places, when we do things, to say, look, you guys are part of the Bat family. You're part of Daddy Saturday. You're held to a higher standard and have higher expectations. Not that you have to be perfect, but like, people are looking at you, people are watching you. And what a great thing for them to learn, because that is life, right? That you need to have self-awareness and be aware of who you are and how you're representing yourself and how others perceive you. And so they've learned a lot through that part of it. And then we just have a ton of fun with it, right? And I think that my biggest goal is I want them to be givers and be generous with their time, with their talents, with their money. And this platform gives them the ability to do that. I think the biggest opportunity will be, as long as COVID allows us, we had set a plan this year to go to Africa to engage with our fatherhood fellow over there in Kenya, and to do the safari and to go do some fatherhood programs over there in Kenya. And like, what an amazing experience for my kids to get to see that and feel that and touch that. And so that's our hope and our goal, is to be able to pull that off.
That is a great lesson that gives them a bar to get better and evolve themselves and reach those standards. And you mentioned, even through your book, you talked about that you admit you're not perfect. And I thought that was very authentic. And you admitted that you get angry and you raise your voice, and you wrote, "I'm not where I want to be as a dad, but I'm fighting to get there." And it really resonated with me, because when you do see these epic dads out there, the envy dad kicks in, but there is also this feeling that, wow, maybe I'm not doing a great job because I did lose my temper, or I did have a situation where I didn't spend as much time. And it's almost, in some sense, if you simplify it to a diet where you had a cheat day and you made a mistake and you ate ice cream, right? Like, that doesn't mean that you're not being successful in your diet. It just means you have to recognize that you're not doing the activities that's going to create the success, and you get better. And one question I came to my mind as I was reading that part is, where do you want to be as a dad when you said that sentence?
Well, I think that perfection in fatherhood is a myth, right? Just like perfection in anything is a myth. And so you have to have grace. And one of the biggest things, grace with yourself and grace with your kids. And one of the things that I found is that some of the best moments, best teaching moments, best learning moments, best caught moments are when I have messed up and I've showed my kids how to sincerely apologize or how to sincerely ask for forgiveness. That's a powerful moment for them, for my kids to see their dad be humble and to come down and ask for their forgiveness and to say, "Hey, I screwed up. I messed up really bad. Like, I'm really sorry. Our relationship is way more important than the results. And I didn't value our relationship enough. And I was too focused on the results. And I was critical of you, or I was harsh with you, or I lost my temper with you. And that's not acceptable. And I'm sorry. And I want to get better. And I'm sorry that happened. I'm going to do my best to not let it happen again, but I'm not perfect and that may happen. But the important thing is that we maintain this relationship." And so I work really hard on that. And, you know, oftentimes I found, and I don't know if it's like, if you found the same thing or other dads that are listening have also experienced this, but many times the problem is that I've found that my circumstances are what dictates my attitude and my actions. And so my own insecurities, my own inadequacies, my own environment, right? Those things control my actions and my attitudes towards my kids far more than I want them to. And so if I'm insecure about feeling unorganized at work, or feel like I'm not living up to the standard that I want to in my physical fitness or whatever it may be, right? That insecurity will come out on other people, because it's far easier to push that out on somebody else than it is to take it internally and examine yourself and fix it. And so I may get upset at my kids. And oftentimes I'm like, maybe they deserved it, but they didn't deserve it to the level that I got upset with them at, and or the reason why I was upset with them. And the whole reason that happened was because of the fact that I was insecure or feeling ill-equipped or inadequate with myself. And that's an important thing for fathers to realize, is to examine themselves and have that self-awareness to be able to make those adjustments when that happens.
Mm-hmm. That's a deep one, because that goes to the core of a generational shift in fatherhood, at least in my opinion, is that ability to reflect and acknowledge your shortcomings and then communicate the apology to your kids, something you learned from your father, or was this something that you evolved through reflection on being a dad?
So, you know, I don't really ever remember my dad apologizing to me. I feel like I apologized to him more than he apologized to me ever. But at the same time, you know, it was more as I've become a student of fatherhood, right? And as I started to examine fatherhood and the role that I play and the role I play with my kids, I started to look really deep into this idea of, you know, what are those core things that I want my kids to be able to have? Core values, core principles. Empathy is one of them. Grace is another, right? The ability to ask for forgiveness and to forgive others. And so, you know, those things have all been a part of how I've applied that into my life. And I feel like that's been a big part of that process with my own kids.
It's interesting because my story is of an absentee father. I never was raised with a father. So I was really fortunate to have some very strong father figures. And I believe that that is a big reason why I was directed along the right path, even when the statistics would have veered me off and very well almost did in many times. And my mother, for all the amazing emotional support that she gave me, it was something that I always yearned for with a father. And I think even to today, it's interesting when I have some type of interaction with a male leader, I almost reside back to being a kid and wanting a father just to pat me on the back. And I go over and above to try to get that kind of recognition. And so, you know, I think having a father in your picture is just absolutely incredible. And I know that that's an area that you focus. But what I've been told from a lot of our guests and people that have been fortunate is that, and this is by no means a statistical sample, but what I've been told is that they have changed their philosophy and as fathers, but their father would never have apologized to them. That was just something in that generation you just didn't do. Like, the kids went to the corner, they were quiet, they sat at a different table during dinner. They, you know, knew the father was out to work and came back, needed his quiet time, went golfing sometimes on the weekends. And what we're seeing, or at least what I've seen in my own circle network, is that the definition of a father and an engaged father and a good father has changed over the last generation. Is that the same view that you have?
Very much so. And, you know, I think that's where the core principle of Daddy Saturday is, that intentional and engaged fatherhood is the new way, the new normal for fatherhood. And, you know, if we're going to change the next generation as fathers, we need to be intentional and engaged with our kids at a level that we've never been before. And that's super important, because as our kids are growing up, the culture is so different. Access to technology, right? Access to media, just the pressures that are on our kids today are unprecedented. And, you know, if we were to father like the fathers in the past, my opinion is that we would not be able to have the generation of kids that we could have going forward, because they're going to be trained by the culture and by the media and by peer pressure, as opposed to being trained by their father and being raised by their father and giving guidance by their father. And I think that's the role of the father. By being intentional and being engaged, right, you just have all those moments where you can teach and train and raise up good kids who become great adults. That's the goal that probably every father either has or should have as their north, their true north or their guiding star going forward. So I think it is pivotal. I think fatherhood has changed. Our society has changed, right? Technology has changed. It's evolving faster than I can even keep up with. But what I do know is that by being intentional and being engaged, that is the key way to ensure that your kids have the best chance to go out there and succeed in a very difficult and challenging world.
And in your TEDx talk on the fatherless epidemic, you use statement 49 million kids have fathers, but you posed a question, but how many are disengaged, vacant shells, zombie-like figures? And you put some stats behind that, and it was very powerful statement. And so you've broadened the definition of fatherless from more than just the biological father is not in the house or a child is raised without some father figure, but you could have the father in the house if they're not engaged, and they're one of those terms you used, they may just be equally ineffective for that child's future.
Yeah. You know, it all came from a visit to New York City, and I was walking early morning when most people were going to work down the sidewalk, and I was there on a personal trip. And so, you know, I was laid back and just kind of taking in the sights, and I watched these figures, and they were like zombie-like shells, literally just walking across the street to the office and to work. And there's nothing in New York City, but that's just the perception that I saw when I was there. And it struck such a chord with me. I could not get that image out of my mind. And I worked in corporate America, and our headquarters was in New York City in Manhattan. And so I've been there many times myself, and I didn't go to work every day in that environment, but I saw that vacant figure, right? And I saw the hour and a half ride of the subway home or the train home. And that's New York, or that's that area. But how many dads are like that in small towns and other areas across the country, right? Where they just are, they're unfulfilled, they're unsatisfied. They're feeling inadequate, ill-equipped, insecure, and are just really struggling. And they need some help. They need to be reinvigorated, reignited in their fatherhood. And that's kind of why we started all this, was to help reach those dads. And you're right. When you look at the statistics, there's 24 million kids in America that don't have a biological father in the home, but there's at least double that have a dad who's physically present, but just emotionally absent. And so, you know, those are the dads that we really focus and target and want to reignite and restore their fatherhood.
And you're right on. I don't know if we've had a chance to speak about this, but up until about a month and a half ago, I was a New York City resident, and now I'm located in Florida.
My goodness.
And we had our high rise smack dab in Manhattan. We had a really nice lifestyle. My daughter's in an immersion Mandarin school, and my wife's from Colombia. So we've been raising my daughter trilingual. She speaks fluent Mandarin, fluent Spanish, and then Western Pennsylvania English. So you can figure out which one she does the best. You know, we've had a really good life, and my wife does real estate there, and I've been a management consultant, and I've had a global career, and I'm going to get to a couple of things that your book really resonated with me personally on. But you're right. You go to work and you shuffle off, and I've done it in three different other cities before. So it is not just a localized event in New York City, but you know, I would get into my Via and ride off, and I'd be at the office till 8:30 at night. I'd come back, and most of the time I would try to squeeze a half an hour in with my daughter, or an hour in before we put her to bed too late, because she should have been in bed an hour earlier. And once a week I would get to walk her to school. And then on the weekends I had been pretty determined and for the most part successful, spend all day from the time I woke up to the time I go to sleep doing activities with her. But you know, you get the calls and, you know, duty calls, and sometimes you have to travel, and I was doing quite a bit of traveling. And it's more than the impact on the children. There's a major impact that's never discussed on the father. And it's unfortunate, because it's a silent pressure that can become unsilent if you try to break it and buck the traditional system. And it starts with things in my mind, such as the secondary caregiver. What the heck is that, right? And so you're at work and you want to leave at 5:30 or 6 to go to a ball game or to go hang out with your family. In corporate America, specifically in some of the fast-paced places such as New York City, you know, it's a conversation, and it's not one that's welcoming from the corporations for whatever reason, even though we're all fathers. And so, you know, you just have, for me, I've always had this machete just carving into my heart, because I'm never spending the time I believe. And then COVID comes. And it was interesting, because at first it created a different anxiety, such as, well, I have a job quarantined to this 1,000-square-foot apartment with my family. It's horrible. Not able to go to my office, and I'm going to be distracted on my conference calls. And how professional is that going to look, right? Like all these thoughts come through my mind. And I had these reflection periods. At some point, I thought to myself, how silly. How silly am I worried about those when I've had an opportunity now in my life to sit here and spend time seeing my daughter, although it's homeschool, seeing my daughter go to school, seeing my family at 5 o'clock and being able to hang out, being able to have lunch, being able to have dinner. It was interesting how quickly society fills your life up with the wrong priorities. And so as you walk through it, and as I was reading your book, it sounds like you've had those reflections along the way of your life and you've acted on them. And I think you're really striking a chord with men more than just the impact on kids, but the impact on our own mental health.
Well, thank you. You know, I agree with everything that you said. And I think that as men, we tend to be prideful and arrogant and are willing to look introspectively a lot, and we bury things and won't admit sometimes when we need help. And that probably starts first and foremost with our mental health. Because physical health, you can see it, right? Or other people may notice it, but then your mental health, that's on the inside. And so I think that that's a huge area of opportunity and a huge need right now, especially to your point, coming out of COVID and with all that's going on in our society right now. There's a lot of people that are really struggling, and you know, I'm not immune to that either, right? We've had a ton of things that have happened in our life. We talked about some of them in the beginning of the conversation. And so, you know, I'm trying to deal with those and process those just like anyone else. And I feel like that's why one of the principles we talk about, being comfortable, being uncomfortable, is so important, because like life is a series of crises, right? You're coming out of a crisis or going into a crisis. It just goes back and forth. And so if you are better apt to prepare to deal with those things and have faith and are diligent with your finances and are physically in good health and sleep well and eat right and, you know, do all those things and have a strong base in your family and good friends around you, then you're setting yourself up for success, right? And that's so important, because men try to do things in isolation too often. Fatherhood is one of those things. And I believe you can't do fatherhood in isolation. So you can try, but your fuse is going to burn out quickly. And so by surrounding yourself with other great men and other fathers, that's how you sustain yourself long term and have that peak performance over the duration of your time as a father.
That's perfectly said. And Justin, when you go back to that statement you wrote in your book, which you said, I'm not where I want to be as a dad, but I'm fighting to get there. You used the word fighting, and I can only assume that that was an intentional word versus the others that you could have put in place there, such as working or learning. What made you select the word fighting?
I believe that fatherhood is no longer a playground. It's a battleground. And so we need to fight as fathers for our role as men. We need to fight for masculinity. We need to fight for this father shaming that's going on right now in our media and our society. We need to fight for our kids and for their future. We need to fight for justice and what's right for those that can't help themselves. I believe that it is a fight. It is a battle, right? And so when you approach it with that mentality, then my goal is to light the fire inside of the fathers that I'm talking to. And so to use a word, anything other than fight, right, or battle, I don't know what other word I would use, because, you know, I want men to rise up like Braveheart, paint their faces and get after it. And how they show up in that role is by being intentional and being engaged with their kids, by loving their wives well, right? By being pillars in their community and doing the right things. And so that's why I chose that word.
I thought it was a fantastic word, and you just demonstrated that it had been well thought out and very intentionally placed. And so you have me excited. Even as you're talking about it, I can just feel the passion, and it just encourages me and motivates me to go out and just be a better dad and be part of it. You mentioned the dad shaming out there. What are the examples that you look at around what fatherhood should be versus the way people are perceiving or shaming others around fatherhood?
Well, I think it's improved to a slight extent, but you know, part of our culture, tended to portray men in a certain light and kind of emasculated men. I vehemently disagree with that mindset, right? I think that the role of a man is to display masculinity, and that's what their kids will model and look for, whether it's a girl and what her future husband will look like, or a boy and what he should be like as a man. And so I think that was downplayed in society to a large extent. I also believe that when you look at the stereotypical, whether it's a cartoon or a reality show or a TV show in general, in the media often it's the dad on the couch with the beer in his hand who's overweight, his feet are kicked up, and it's like he's doing nothing, right? And that apathetic, passive dad is the complete opposite of who I am. Most dads that I know are, and that's just not reality. So stop portraying that as a dad, the dad that can't do anything, right? And so I think that there are some great role models out there now that are stepping up. I can name a few. I think, you know, Chip Gaines is one great example, right? He's hilarious. He's far from perfect, but he knows his stuff when it comes to construction. He's an awesome dad. And, you know, people like that are stepping forward and portraying what my view of a great dad is in reality. And there's lots of those figures that have started to step up. So we're seeing a change, but there's still a bunch of it out there.
I agree. One of the areas that Dustin, who's my partner, and I are focused on is building a platform around the Dad Corp. And so when we're working with suppliers or other marketing experts to help us figure out what's our strategy and our approach, the first question that we generally get is, what is your vision and who is your market? And then, you know, what is going to attract them? And you get these questions and we have to communicate our vision around the Dad Corp. And I start out now with, the Dad Corp is not the Homer Simpson dad that has bad fashion, poor health. The dad bod doesn't need to be the beer gut. The dad bod can be somebody like yourself that's out about to run a 100-mile race that only got interrupted because he's been walking around with some freaking stingray particles in his foot and had to get still tried to go through with it, right? You know, that to me is the modern dad. And so our goal at the Dad Corp too is to change that perception from, you know, a dad that has bad jokes and just is kind of the clueless person in the house and you know, using your word, as the disengaged dad, versus the most interesting dad in the world that's able to be epic. And I love the word you used, and you used that word in your TEDx talk, you know, be epic and have epic adventures with their kids, but also be successful in their career and have a good family. And then also focus on their health and their community. And so they create this, you know, it's never a perfect balance, but there are dads out there that achieve that every day. And I think we don't recognize them. And then brand dads as the Homer Simpson dad, which drives me crazy.
Yeah, completely right. And that's what I'm so proud of you guys for stepping out and trying to change and bring brands and other products and partners into your world and your space who can help change that, right? And I think that is, there is a new age dad, and the millennial dad can be a group that can help change that. And I think it's all of our jobs to help recreate that and reshape what that dad role looks like. And again, far more is caught than taught. It not only works with kids, it works with other dads. And so as other dads see dads stepping up and doing the right things, then they're more keen to gravitate towards that. One of the things though that I think is so critical, and we can kind of wrap on this, is that I believe that the role of the dad is not to be the hero, it's to be the guide. And too many dads try to play the role of the hero in their kids' lives, and it causes them to not experience failure in their youth. And then when they get into adulthood, you know, failure at 8 is different than 28. And so what happens is they end up not knowing how to deal with failure, not having the mechanisms to deal with failure, and therefore it is catastrophic in adulthood. But when you serve as the guide, one of the things that it does is it causes you to lower your pride, your ego, and allow other great men to come into your kids' lives. And to show up for your kids, to help your kids in ways that you can't help them because you may not have expertise in those areas. And so I've done this in my kids' life, and it's one of the most rewarding things is to watch these other men come into their lives and give them that experience. And guess what it does at the end of the day? It ends up making me the hero anyways, which is ironic, right, in the whole process. But that process of lowering your pride, lowering your ego, allowing other men to come into your kids' lives and show them things that you can never do for them is so powerful. And I think that's the key for all of us as dads. If we're going to change the stereotype of dads, it's not individually, it's like collectively as dads coming together saying, hey, we're all different. We all got unique skill sets. There's no one shape, size, or form for what a dad should look like or be. But we do know this. Dads should be intentional. They should be engaged. And they should be focused on raising good kids that become great adults. And if we all do that and do it together, then that's how we make the change.
I love it. And you have a dad boss training. So as we go to wrap up, I want to make sure that I get this out there because that was one of the reasons why I reached out to you in the first place. You've just recently launched this dad boss training.
Yeah. So dad boss is a 7-part video series. So I looked out there and I was like, how do we do ministry to men? How do we create something that can be a platform? And it really was around this concept of bringing on-demand access to dads in a platform. So we created Dad Boss with some partners, and it's focused on faith, family, fitness, finance, the 4 core pillars of fatherhood, and it's available at dadboss.com. Everyone can get access to it right now. We had a Father's Day promo of $59, so that'll continue to be in play as long as we can get as many dads signed up as possible so they have access to these core principles for fatherhood.
Well, we'll certainly sign up from the Dad Corp and support you all and go through the training ourselves. One reflection that came through my mind as I was looking at your product is it how much money I've spent, and I'm sure others have, I've spent on my corporate career, I've spent on my financial well-being and all of those trainings and certifications, yet I had never really invested in trying to be the best father that I could be or the best husband, which is really the reason why you do all of that career and professional and financial things in the first place. So it was kind of an interesting reflection I had as I was looking through your training.
That's awesome. Thank you. And I feel like there's a lot of dads out there that have that kind of same perspective. And an interesting takeaway for me, and I'll just kind of pull back the curtain for a minute, is when I launched this platform, I thought, you know, with good intentions and good motives, that I could reach all these dads by helping them be better dads. And all these dads would want to be better dads. And guess what I found? Not that dads didn't want to be better dads. That's not what they wanted to hear. Because it made them feel like they weren't a good dad. And so we changed our messaging, especially with Dad Boss. It became more about how do you unlock the unlimited potential inside of your children? How do you help your kids handle any adversity that life's going to throw at them? That kind of messaging is what I found. It started to resonate with dads. And maybe that'll help you guys, the Dad Corp too, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's what all dads want. And then guess what? I give them what they need, which is learning how to be a better dad through the principles in Dad Boss. But on the surface, what they really want is to help their kids succeed in life and in everyday opportunities. And so that's what we try to give them. And ultimately what they get is a really great foundation for how to be a better dad.
Amazing, man. Well, I tell you, you've clearly thought through this stuff, and the way you communicate it makes me realize that there are some really good dads out there, and clearly you're one of them. And so thank you for everything that you're doing. One last question we always wrap up on. What would you want your children to say about dad whenever they are talking about you as adults one day, maybe with their own children?
I've thought a lot about this, and one of the things that if you think about like even your eulogy, right? What you would want people to say about you. What I want my kids to say is that my dad was always there for me, and my dad was always moving forward, and he was always moving forward as an individual. He's always moving our family forward, and he's always moving me forward. And I think in life is all about momentum, and my dad was all about creating momentum for our family and for me as an individual.
That's great. You nailed it. And it's funny you used the word eulogy because we used to call it the dad obituary, and that was a little dark. So we moved it to the dad ode, which I think is, to your point, when you change the terminology, it's amazing how it resonates a little bit better. So, Justin, man.
I love that.
On a serious note, thank you so much. It was such a fantastic experience. I know you're a busy man. I know you guys have a lot going on. Just for the listeners, I know you put a little bit out there around where people can find some of your stuff, but could you wrap it up with where everybody could find you or where you would like them to go look and learn more about Daddy Saturday and anything else that you have going on?
Yes, of course. Thank you. So daddysaturday.com is the hub for all things Daddy Saturday. Dadboss.com, BOSS, is where you can find the Dad Boss curriculum. And then you can find me, Justin Batt at LinkedIn as well, if you want to connect with me personally, and of course, across all their social as well.
All right, my man. Well, hey, thank you so much again. It was great to speak with you. And thank you again for just responding and taking the time to speak to a complete stranger about being a dad. So I know you're busy, clearly got a lot of things going on. So to take an hour out, it just demonstrates the type of person you are. And I can't wait to get the message out with our listeners as well as our audience out there. So we'll continue to push out your stuff because I just think you're doing some amazing things and it's really important that people hear.
Thank you so much. It's awesome spending time with you as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Justin.
Stalling bedtime long as you could. I remember every hug and every laugh before I knew it went so fast. And no, I didn't grow slow as molasses. I know life's not, but those days were perfect.